Banal of America.
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 Banal of America Audio.
I'm sure a lot of people are saying, come on, man, where are you? A month into 2008, what are we looking back at 2007 for? But, you know, I haven't really seen a lot of big picture looks at what went on in ufology. So at least we're digging into something here that I don't think has been done yet.
I haven't seen it anywhere.
Exactly.
There's a tiny little bit of the cover of that laughter curtain that's being peeled away. Just a little bit. Everybody was, you know, getting along great, no matter what their real viewpoint. There wasn't that ufological squabbling. It's one of the most fun interview formats I'm on for any show, because people get to say whatever they want.
Nice.
Or say things like batshit.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
Hello there, my friends. This is Tim Banal of BanalofAmerica.com with the return of BOA Audio Season 3. It is February 2nd, 2008. Happy Groundhog Day, folks. We're back from hiatus. I'm feeling refreshed. I'm really happy to be back and excited about bringing you all new episodes of BOA Audio Season 3. We've got a ton of great stuff coming up in the pipeline, but we're going to save all of the superfluous talk about BOA and BOA Audio for the close of the program, because I know you're ready to dig into some fresh BOA Audio goodness. We kick things off here this week with our guest, longtime BOA Audio friend, Greg Bishop of Project Beta and UFOMystic.com fame. As I note here in the beginning of the interview, Greg has his finger on the pulse of the UFO field, so I couldn't think of anyone better to bring on the program to close the book on 2007 and dissect the past year in ufology. We're going to cover all the big stories from 07, including the O'Hare case, the Symington story, the French UFO files release, the Roswell 60th anniversary, the drone photo craze of the summertime, the Kucinich UFO flap, and the disclosure push of November. We're going to get Greg's take on all of these events and discuss what they mean from a big-picture perspective for the field of ufology. Plus, we're going to discuss esoteric trends of 2007, what was hot, what was not, where are things going in 08. We're going to talk about Greg's piece on Long John Neville from UFO Mystic, his appreciation for the contactee movement, and, of course, tons and tons more. The interview clocks in at 2 hours, and it is a very fast, fun, and loose edition of the program, and the perfect vehicle to kick off the 2008 portion of BOA Audio Season 3. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Greg Bishop, let me give you a little bit of background on him. Greg Bishop became interested in UFOs at a very early age. He has no idea why. In 1991, he co-founded a magazine entitled The Excluded Middle, for the purpose of educating himself first, and secondly, passing on the info to interested readers. TEM was a journal of UFOs, conspiracy research, psychedelia, and new science. It can be found online at www.excludedmiddle.com. The book Wake Up Down There was a collection of articles from the magazine published in the year 2000. Greg's writing has appeared in the LA Weekly, 40 in Times, UFO Magazine, and Magical Blend, among others, and in the book-length anthologies Conspiracy and Cyberculture, Zen and the Art of Close Encounters, Kooks, and You Are Being Lied To. In 2005, his book, Project Beta, was an attempt to set the record straight on the Paul Benowitz disinformation saga. His third and newest title, Weird California, was published in March of 2006. His internet show, Radio Misterioso, can be heard on Sundays from 8 to 10 Pacific Time at www.killradio.org. When not writing, Greg can be found in the southwestern deserts of the U.S., or flying his paraglider above vertiginous cliffs and mountains, sometimes with a propeller strapped to his back. Successful bribes include new Mexican cuisine, recordings of outsider music, rare contact e-books, tickets to baseball games, and selected original artwork. His websites are www.ufomystic.com and www.excludedmiddle.com. Definitely want to check those out. They are top-notch websites. I know you want to get right into the action here, so without any further ado, let's rock and roll. This interview was recorded on January 16th, 2008. Greg Bishop talking about 2007, the year in ufology, on BOA Audio Season 3. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very special edition of Been All of America Audio. We're back from our hiatus, and I wanted to kick off the second half of the season here with a longtime friend of the show, one of the very first guests we had on the program, Greg Bishop, author of Project Beta, and one of the great minds behind UFOMystic.com. He's also got a website, ExcludedMiddle.com. He hosts the podcast show Radio Mysterioso. He had me on as a guest last spring. He's the man. He's also not only on the first season of Been All America Audio, he was on the baseball special last year. So, like I said, he's a longtime friend of the show. Greg, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Tim.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I've been looking forward to having you on the show for a while, and I knew you were the perfect guest to kick off the second half of Season 3. What I wanted to do with you here on the show was, since you run, well, you don't run it, but since you write for UFO Mystic, you've got your finger on the pulse of the UFO field, definitely had your finger on the pulse of the field over the past year. And I kind of wanted to look back at 2007 at some of the big events and get your thoughts on them and kind of share my thoughts on them and really sort of look back on these events and give some big picture analysis to what went down in 2007 as far as the UFO phenomenon goes, especially, like I said, in a big picture sort of way, in a public relations kind of way. You know, how did these stories affect the people that aren't like you and me who follow the UFO field but are kind of on the mainstream? And a lot of big stories sort of broke into the mainstream this past year in ufology. So we're going to sort of dig into that kind of thing. And as I said, since you have your finger on the pulse of the UFO field, being one of the great guys at UFO Mystic, I think you're the perfect guy to do that. Is that cool?
Sure, fine. Let's do it.
And I'm sure a lot of people are saying, you know, come on, man, it's February 2nd when this episode is going to air. And they're like, oh, it's already a month into 2008. What are we looking back at 2007 for? But, you know, for starters, a lot of people probably, you know, just sort of throw together stuff at the end of the year and don't really take the time to think about it. And I haven't really seen a lot of big picture looks at what went on in ufology. So at least we're digging into something here that I don't think has been done yet.
I haven't seen it anywhere.
Exactly. So, you know, now we can look at this stuff, and in a couple of years' time, we can look back and pick up the episode and be like, all right, well, what did happen in ufology in 2007? I guess we should start out with the first big event of 2007, actually almost practically on the very first day of 2007, and that was the O'Hare story breaking into the mainstream. Of course, there was a UFO sighting at O'Hare Airport in Chicago. It actually happened in early November, but managed to somehow break into the mainstream news the very first couple days of the year. Talk a little bit about that story and your thoughts on how it kind of exploded like a month after it happened in the first place.
Well, as I remember it, there was a sighting at O'Hare by a couple pilots and a few people working on the ground in, what was it, September or November of 2006?
I think it was November.
Yeah, and then the story for some reason didn't break until, like you said, the first of the year. And it took on a life of its own, and it dominated the news for at least a few days. And then somebody came out with a picture of it, I think, like a month later. The sighting, what it was this big, I guess it was a disc-type thing that was up in the clouds, just kind of floating there. It didn't move very much till suddenly they said it rose up really fast and, like, punched a hole in the clouds, which I've never seen anything do, and it sounded very strange. The funny thing was the news reports that I saw, the kind of the replays on the YouTube and Google video and all that, they didn't really make too much fun of it. I didn't get the sense of that, the giggle factor at the end, which I thought was good. And that story had, you know, kind of a staying power. Then a few months later, the what's that group that Bernard Haysh has? They put together a report about it. The report said it was very strange. We can't prove exactly what it was. There were some trained observers there, and it was a real event. But we don't know what it was because we don't have enough data. So it sounds like, unfortunately, a typical UFO sighting.
Yeah.
But the value, like I said, was that I didn't see way less of the giggle factor than there used to be.
Definitely. I thought that was one of the big aspects of the O'Hare story, was that not only did it break into the mainstream, but it also was treated with a pretty good amount of seriousness. And I think it may have been one of the first UFO cases in the contemporary times, I'd say, you know, since the 90s or whatever, or at least since Phoenix Lights, where the whole issue of, like, national security kind of came up. Like, a lot of people in the UFO field have been saying for a while, you know, why aren't they addressing the issue of national security with UFOs? And that sort of became, finally, the media did kind of take a look at the national security aspect of it.
Yeah, well, the Haitian people like that said, well, this should be a matter of not, at least not national security, but air transport security, because if things are flying around up there, that, especially over a busy airport, we ought to know what they are, because they're going to affect traffic and flight patterns and all that, and it could cause a problem. And I don't think UFOs have ever caused planes to run into each other. I'm really not sure about that. I can't think of any cases where that's happened. I can think of cases where planes supposedly ran into them, but not having planes run into each other. But, yeah, they were saying, and since he's got a bunch of people on his on that study and on his board that are pilots and air traffic people and former government officials, I think they took it seriously. They thought it should be, they should take a serious look at it and report their findings, and they did. But like I said, unfortunately, they didn't come up with anything. They just said this appeared to be a real event, but we don't know what it was.
And what would you say, like, the tenor was in the UFO community surrounding the O'Hare case? Because I sort of was watching the debate from afar, and there was definitely a debate about it. What would you say, like, what was the point of view, I guess you could say, of the people in the UFO world?
I didn't see that much debate. I kind of looked on the updates list for a while when the story first broke. And some people, you know, had this kind of cautious attitude. I can't remember or name names. But a lot of people, which unfortunately I saw this, thought it was like the second coming, you know. Oh, this is going to be the one.
Yeah.
This is going to break it open. Now everybody's going to know that it's real important. And, of course, it really didn't do that. All it did was show that there's a tiny little bit of the cover, that laughter curtain that's being peeled away, just a little bit, which is good. You know, people got to be patient.
Exactly, yeah. That was probably the good aspect of it. And I thought also that it did sort of bring ufology a little bit back into the news, in a sense, because there hadn't been a big major U.S. case within this decade, if you will, you know, from 2000 to 08 or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
No, there hasn't. I talked to people after, you know, there was a UFO conference scheduled for September 13th of 2001.
Yeah.
That my friend Miles was doing.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't happen.
Yeah.
But I noticed after that, nobody really cared about UFOs for about 2 or 3 years.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think that's because it's kind of a pastime of people who have time and psychic space to worry about other things. And at that point, most people didn't. Even the sightings went down, or maybe people reporting them went down, I don't know, but the sightings went away too. There weren't as many sightings, there weren't as many abduction reports. You know, why is that? Everybody was thinking about something else.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you know, maybe the phenomenon was still there, but it's just, you know, it's like when somebody runs into a classroom with a banana and starts stabbing somebody, and everybody thinks it was a knife. It's because that's what they expect.
Yeah,
you know, they ask later, and 80% of the class thinks it was actually a big shiny knife, and a couple of people say, "No, it was a banana." I think that people's mindset determines really importantly what they see, what they feel, how they interpret things. So, you know, as things kind of go back to baseline, you know, the UFO stories start coming out again.
Yeah, yeah. And it seems like maybe the O'Hare story, you know, brought the UFO subject back into the mainstream a little bit, and then sort of kind of set the trend for the rest of the year as far as stories on the UFO subject getting more mainstream news.
Yeah, yeah.
It seemed like little UFO stories all of a sudden would kind of get a little more press coverage than I would have expected. Maybe the popularity of the O'Hare story had something to do with that.
It helped open the door back up, yeah, certainly.
Now, do you think this case has any sort of, like, long-term cachet? I know you probably don't, like, I know you probably haven't pored over the details of the O'Hare case too much, but do you think it'll be something that we'll hear about as time goes on, or do you think it's just going to be sort of an isolated thing that'll be looked back on and there won't be much to it?
You know, if it wasn't for that report, I don't think the book would be closed, because a lot of UFO people read that report.
Yeah.
And, oh, wait, here we go. Here's the conclusion. This investigation has determined that, based on the testimony of multiple eyewitnesses in different locations at O'Hare International Airport, a small physical and apparently solid object hovered over the United Airlines concourse area for at least 10 minutes or more, but was not detected either by radar or visually by air traffic controllers in the tower. For this reason, the object is considered a definite potential threat to flight operations at O'Hare. That was their conclusion. Something was there. And the thing was that the report was, what, like 200 pages or something?
Oh, wow.
It was a fat report, man. There was, you know, there are weather reports going out, you know, 10 miles from the airport, and, you know, humidity readings and cloud ceiling readings and all kinds. It was exhaustively detailed. I mean, more than a UFO organization has ever put into a report on anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's not much more that people in ufology can say, except for that serious people looked at this problem seriously and figured out there was something real there. So, you know, what else can they say? How can it – it can't, you know, keep going. There's no more questions about it, really.
Yeah.
That anybody else has come up with. I mean, since Hayes and all his buddies there put out that report, which, like I said, was exceedingly thorough. It's the best UFO report I've ever read.
Nice. That's quite an endorsement.
From the bits of it that I have read. Well, I like him. He's actually a very he actually pisses off some UFO people, because they consider him a skeptic, and I consider him somebody that's very interested, that's trying to do something that can break through this laughter curtain, or where, you know, most serious people don't think it's a serious subject, and he's taking it seriously, like Jacques Vallée said back in the 60s. We got to take this seriously, because there's a lot of people having these experiences, and you can't just laugh at them.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, science looks bad if we don't take this subject seriously.
Sometimes you're on the right track if you're pissing off the UFO community, sometimes.
You got to piss off both sides every once in a while, and that way I know you're doing really well.
I guess there's really not much more to say about the O'Hare case, because that's sort of, like I said, sort of set the tenor for the rest of the year. And the next big sort of breakout story for ufology was the Symington story, where the Phoenix Lights case kind of reinvented itself all of a sudden. It was the 10-year anniversary of the Phoenix Lights, and all of a sudden, former Arizona Governor Symington came out and said he did see a UFO and became a fixture on the UFO circuit all of a sudden. And like I said, the Phoenix Lights story kind of reinvented itself. I guess talk a little bit about that whole situation.
I thought that Symington was kind of disingenuous. A lot of people thought this, by making fun of it at first and then saying, no, I actually really saw it 10 years after the fact and after he's out of politics. But I don't know. I mean, the guy said that he remember he had that news conference and he brought out one of his assistants dressed in an alien costume?
Yeah.
To make fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
And people asked him, you know, the UFO people anyway, or the disclosure people, said, why did you do that? A lot of people asked him that, and he said, well, I thought the security of the state was at stake, and if we'd taken it seriously, it would have caused a panic, which is a real weaselly answer. If he had taken it seriously, people would have looked at it seriously. What are they going to get scared about? And I think maybe some other stuff was going on, like somebody in the Air Force or the Marines or whatever the base is. Oh, there's a base there near Phoenix, just north of Phoenix. They might have told him just to shut up about it and don't worry. And that might be part of the story isn't coming out. And the other thing was, I guess he had kind of a checkered past, and after he got out of office, he was being investigated for something or other and had to go to trial. So his political career was basically over anyway, so he really had nothing to lose, which is why he just came out and said, yeah, well, I seen him too.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he did it because he wanted to be involved in something again or what, because he was on the Larry King special after that and moderated a panel about the subject and...
Yeah, he's, like I said, he's really become a fixture now in the UFO scene in some respects. A lot of the exopolitics people kind of have hitched their wagon to the story in a lot of ways. What would you say the attitude within ufology was at the time? Now, I remember my personal perspective was I was kind of pissed off about the whole thing because I thought it was kind of like what you say, Weasley, that he did the press conference and had the alien guy, and now he wants to kind of switch sides here. I was a little chagrined about the whole thing. What would you say the attitude in ufology was? Like you said, the O'Hare thing was treated as the second coming. Was this kind of had the same attitude, or were people more mad about the press conference thing still, or what was the attitude, you think?
I think it was just kind of a, you know, people really didn't care because it was, you know, it was kind of an attitude of too little, too late, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that was a general, at least among most people, they're serious about it. Then follow it on a, you know, kind of a daily basis that too little, too late, not really anything to worry about. If the exopolitics people want to put them up on a stick and run around with them, that's fine.
Yeah. Now, do you think that him coming out and saying that he saw the UFO, but, you know, did the press conference to chill everybody out, if you will, do you think that kind of gives credence in some ways to elements and theories of, like, government cover-up type of thing?
Well, yeah. Like I said, maybe... I'm saying maybe. There's no there's no proof of this, but maybe he was told to downplay it, and that's what he came up with, have somebody come out in a silly alien suit. I don't know.
Yeah, and the unfortunate part is, has anyone, I don't know, he hasn't really sort of addressed that as all that I know of, or has anyone even asked him if he was, like, coerced into that kind of situation?
I don't know if anybody's asked him that. And you know what he'd say is, no, it wasn't.
Yeah, yeah, because if he was, that would be one of the first things he'd say.
Well, no, I mean, if he was told not to, I think he would just say, forever he's going to say no.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, if he was going to say something, he already would have. You know what I mean? Like, we already would have.
Oh, yeah, he may have. I don't know.
Were you intrigued or interested, or did you find it interesting that the Phoenix Lights case, on a lot of these things, they kind of just rehashed the story on the anniversary, but like I said, this one kind of became reinvented. It had a whole new element added to it. I don't recall too many stories. Usually they remain pretty static once the events happen, but this one kind of had an extra new layer added to it. Did you find any of that interesting?
You mean the layer that he suddenly said, yeah, I saw them?
Yeah, and all of a sudden, 10 years later, now he's coming out, and it's like, whoa, wait a minute, there's more to this than we thought kind of thing?
Well, to me, it's kind of like people in the military seeing something, being told to shut up about it, and then, you know, 30 years later or so, they go sit in a room with Stephen Greer or somebody on camera and say, yeah, I did see stuff. Yeah, I didn't know what it was. Yes, I was told to shut up about it.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing, but the guy's a politician and he's a squirrely, you know, more squirrely seemingly than other politicians that manage to cover their tracks better, so it has a little less credence, at least to me. And I think that the UFO, you know, rank and file are have pretty much the same attitude. It's not, you know, it's not something new. It's more like, you know, let's concentrate on what happened back then and see if we can find out more about it there, because Symington isn't going to tell us anymore. What's he going to say? I saw something. He's not in government anymore. He's not really respected as an administrator really anymore due to his background. So, you know, why go back and revisit it with him?
We kind of saw more ufology in politics later on in the year. I would have said, you know, midway through the year that maybe that would have opened the door to more politicians kind of like talking about the UFO thing, but then we saw kind of later in the year that that when that happened, it wasn't such a good thing for them. So probably it kind of, the trend may have started and then ended all within the same year.
Yeah, maybe so, but like I said, because of the, mainly because of the O'Hare thing, I think there's, you know, like 0.5% less laughter applied to UFO stories than there used to be.
Yeah.
Especially if it's something, you know, right in the middle of it. You know, if it happened out in the middle of nowhere at a suburban airport somewhere, nobody would have cared. But it happened in the middle of one of the largest cities in the United States with a bunch of trained observers on the ground, multiple witnesses. So it was something that had to be taken a little more seriously, or could be taken more seriously from the point of view of news reading, news watching public.
Yeah. All right. Well, then the next sort of like dual event, I guess you could say, and it's sort of like a May-December romance in a way, because one happened in May and one happened in December, was the French UFO document release that was tepid news, I guess you could say, for a little while in the springtime. And then the Japanese UFO disclosure, in quotes, flap that kind of happened in December. And I guess you could branch them all under the umbrella. And I also, the UK released some UFO files that may have happened in early 08, but I'm not sure. But anyway, you can sort of branch those all under the umbrella of like an international disclosure movement, if you will. What do you think about that whole thing? We've seen this kind of developing over the course of the last couple of years, a little more drip, drip, drip from international sources as far as disclosure goes. Obviously, the Japanese thing was more of a blow-off, but at the same time, it was an international UFO story, if you will. So what do you think about that release of UFO information that's starting to trickle out a little bit?
Well, I think it's nice that the more files are being released, but I think in every case with the British and the French and the, well, I don't think the Americans are releasing any more UFO files than they have. Look, my general feeling about release of UFO information is anything that's released is not really going to tell us any more than we already know, except that governments know a lot more about UFO facts than we do, but they don't know about where they come from, what causes them, if they're unidentified. And I think the documents are going to bear that out. It's just going to say there was something very weird and we took it seriously. But a lot of people know that already, that if there's a something that the authorities don't know about, they want to find out as much about it as they can.
Yeah.
And because of the nature of UFO stuff, it's hard to, you know, nobody really knows what the purpose, origin, or whatever of these objects or whatever causes these sightings are. So it's going to be a lot more data of, you know, we saw this, we took these measurements, we talked to these people, you know.
Yeah.
What's good about it is, since it's from sources where people were real careful about the way they gathered information, the database might be skewed in a way that is helpful. I think that's the good thing about releasing more of this information, whether it be from France or Britain or the United States or, well, even Japan, I guess. That was just a statement, not a release of information.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, more data points, enter those into the database, see if patterns emerge. That's the good part of it. Now, whether it's going to say, well, we know there's aliens coming from other planets, I don't think that's going to happen in from any of those countries.
Yeah, yeah. It's more just like, you know, whether it's a French sighting or an English sighting, it's just a sighting. And like I had Michael Sala on the show, and he kind of made the point that, you know, we have enough sighting reports, kind of we need more of an analysis point of view, and maybe if they had released more of an analysis type of thing, it would help more than just a sighting report.
Yeah, no, that's a sober analysis to me of this release of information. It can only help. I don't think none of it's going to be any big revelation, but it'll be another little brick in that, either taken out of or put into the, whatever you want to call it, into that wall of understanding and possibly getting to the bottom of whatever this is, which I think it's, you know, in the large picture, I don't know if most of us has gotten to the point where we could understand what these things are on their own terms, because coming from a place that I don't think we have a philosophical and physical and, philosophical and physical viewpoint that we can get our minds around it yet.
Yeah.
But you know, more data points helps move in that direction. I think we're going to have to start thinking about the world and the universe and reality and time and causality in a different way to be able to get a handle on what UFOs and other paranormal phenomena are.
Yeah, and mainstream people just aren't ready for that.
Yeah, well, there's the idea that an old guard, regime has to die out basically for new ideas to emerge, because there aren't any people fighting against it at that point, trying to hold down their version of reality that they grew up with.
Yeah, and so maybe someday when the idea that UFOs are real is just sort of a given fact, you know, then maybe it'll be more people will be ready to sort of wrap their minds around it.
Yeah, yeah, that's a way to describe it. Yeah, it's one of those things where I don't think anybody has the words to describe what they are, but the way our minds change, the way we look at things, and the way we look at things as a society, and the way that science looks at things, will change. And it's probably not going to happen till, you know, who knows, till, you know, 20, 30 years after we're gone, I don't know.
Well, hopefully you and I will still be around in 20 years.
That's why I put us our names at the end.
All right.
We could live 100 more years. I don't know what kind of gerontology drugs they have coming out. I keep hoping.
I can kind of foresee your answer, I guess you'd say, but do you think any other country will ever, like, sort of come out with any sort of definitive UFO statement, sort of like what we thought we were getting from Japan, but it turned out it was more of a joke. but do you think anyone else will come out with anything like that, or do you think that, that you know, there's kind of like a set mindset within world governments that, you know, it's best not even to deal with that right now?
I think the way that power is structured right now all over the world, where there's people at the top telling people at the bottom what to do, makes it very unlikely that somebody's going to come out and as the head of a government and say, this is what it is, this is as much we know, and we don't know much more than you do. You know, I think that's what it's going to be. I mean, people have said, oh, you know, the U.S. government, other governments know that there's aliens coming from other planets. I do not know that. I think that they think there might be, but they're not going to admit that. Why admit that? Because that works into the power base. That works into we're in charge and you're not.
Yeah.
To admit that means, you know, oh, well, there's something I don't know about and I don't know much about and I can't do anything about it. Sorry.
All right. That's pretty much all I really have on the international disclosure front. So we'll move to the next big event of 2007 and one that you were pretty well entangled with, and that's the Roswell 60th anniversary. It was sort of the year of anniversaries all around in Esoterica. Phoenix Lights, Roswell, Kenneth Arnold, Shag Harbor, Mothman, I'm sure. There's many other ones, too. But, of course,
Heaven's Gate,
there you go, yeah. So there was a lot of anniversaries, it seems, here in 2007. And, of course, the big daddy is Roswell. You said you went down there, so I guess just talk a little bit about the vibe of the big 60th anniversary for Roswell. Personally, I felt like there wasn't as much buzz as there has been in the past, and I thought there would be a little more, but it didn't feel like it. But you'd probably know because you were on the ground in Roswell.
Yeah. Well, the buzz is different because it wasn't like the 50th anniversary, you know. And they've been doing it every year since then, so they kind of wanted to make a big deal out of it and have people come out. They had two different speaking schedules going. One that the city put on by itself, and one that the UFO Museum put on by itself, and none of the speakers were shared.
So, like, dueling conferences?
Yeah, it kind of was.
Weird.
The funny thing was, I mean, the I didn't hear anybody at the museum, not that I talked to a lot of people there. I talked to a lot of the speakers there, and I didn't hear anybody at the city's facility in the conference center really bad mouthing the other. I mean, there didn't seem to be any competition on a democratic level. Maybe at the, you know, at the upper level, obviously, because they had their own two conferences. But both the museum and the city put on, you know, a good amount of speakers. It's funny though, the museum seemed to concentrate on like the superstars of ufology. You know, they had Stan Friedman and they had, who else did they have?
Jesse Marcel?
Yeah, they had Jesse Marcel Jr. there. I talked to him. He's a nice guy. Paul Davids was there, selling copies of Roswell and talking more about, the production and his experience and since making the film. Because I asked him once, I said, you know, what got you interested? And Paul said, well, I had my own sighting, and he described it to him. It was right over his house here in L.A. about 15 or 20 years ago.
Oh, weird.
It was kind of a spectacular sighting. It was like this I think it was a this kind of oblong, silvery-shaped thing that was floating right over his house. And he went chasing it in his car and couldn't find it.
Oh, wow.
And over at the conference center, the Roswell Museum had Nick, had me. I'm trying to think who was there. Oh, wait, I have a schedule here right in front of me. How convenient!
Nice. Go right, Lee. He must have been there, right?
Yes. He gave a presentation about were the early contactees ritual magicians, which was great. I love that one.
Sounds
and it was one, you know what? I liked it because it was one of those things where you said, damn it, I wish I had done that one.
Yeah, it sounds weird. It sounds good. That's very Go Rightly.
Yes, it is. He might have been asked back. I'm going back next year, this year.
Nice.
Because they have it. They kind of said, would you be willing to speak again? And I said, yeah, yeah, of course. And
do you drink or anything?
Maybe I should get a drink of something, yeah.
Yeah, you sound like you're dying over there.
Oh, Peter Robbins spoke at the one in at the city conference. It's funny, you know, Peter Robbins. People think of him as the guy that the guy with the who wrote the book on the Rendlesham case.
Yeah.
But his interests range far. He's I think he's doing lectures now on Wilhelm Reich.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that. I saw that. And he's done a lot of work on the James Borstal case, and he's done some stuff in UFOs in the media, too, that's been pretty interesting. So he gets pigeonholed, but he's actually quite diverse. He's huge in Japan, you know. For real. For real. He's been over to Japan a number of times.
Oh, yeah, Richard Dolan was also at the city conference.
And what would you say, like, the buzz was on the ground there? Sort of more just like a party element, everybody from the UFO field kind of hanging out because it was the big party birthday for Roswell where people, you know, was it kind of like been there, done that because it's just been done so often, the Roswell scene, if you will?
Yeah, it was pretty much, it seemed like a business as usual and a homecoming and a let's hang out and talk. And it was the funny, you know what I noticed that I wrote about when I wrote actually a couple dispatches from there and put them on UFO Mystic, that people didn't seem to be really care about differences of opinion, which I thought was nice. I didn't see all these, because at the 97 one, all I remember are these, contentious debates.
Yeah.
About, you know, was this person here at this time, or was it a weather balloon, or wasn't? I mean, I saw the lecture, not lecture, but the debate between Kevin Randall and Carl Flock, and there were raised voices in that. But this one, it seems like, well, you know what? They didn't really have any skeptics there, and I would consider Carl Flock a skeptic. It seemed like everybody was, you know, getting along great, no matter, you know, no matter what their real viewpoint. There wasn't that ufological squabbling that I usually notice at the edges of, or sometimes in the middle of a UFO conference, which was nice. Oh, another person there was Farah Yardozu, who has been getting a lot of speaking dates in the last couple of years, which is good.
Yeah, she's great. She was on Banal of America last season, so
She was on my show last year, too.
Nice. What do you think was the cause for the lack of strife, if you will, amongst the people there? Is the lack of skeptics, or do you think maybe just that the case hasn't really evolved much in the last 10 years since the 97 situation?
Well, you know, right before the conference, there was that, strangely timed release. I'm saying strangely in quotes.
Yeah.
Of that deathbed statement of, what was it, Walter Hout?
Mm-hmm, the Hout affidavit.
Yeah. And people were very interested in that, you know, wanted to see it. But what I heard, which I guess might be part of the squabbling, I don't know. It wasn't overt squabbling. What I basically heard about it is that it was the statement was taken by somebody else, and at that point, Hout was not in the best mental condition, so he might have been, you know, willing to say whatever he thought he was supposed to say, which makes it really not worth so much. And even if he was in his right mind saying what he said, he's not really saying anything different than he did while he was alive, or than other people have said, was that they saw something they thought was not from this world that was in Roswell in 1947.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed a lot of buzz around the affidavit, actually, like the Hout affidavit, where a lot of people were really excited about it at the time, but it didn't seem to break the story, if you will. It didn't break the Roswell back, despite what everyone had kind of hoped.
Yeah, it's one of those things that makes people in the UFO, some people in the UFO field, very excited, but outside of the UFO field, nobody really cares, and it makes no real great impact.
Yeah.
Which is what most of these things are.
That seems to be the case, yeah. A lot of things, they'll break through the mainstream for a couple of days, but they never have that staying power that you think they might. Do you think that Roswell sort of turned the corner in 1997 with the 50th anniversary, and it's going downhill a little bit now? It's maybe fading somewhat. Maybe it'll explode again sort of for the 75th anniversary, but we're kind of in a down cycle of Roswell.
Yeah, probably. So, 'cause like you said, nothing really new has come out about it. And, you know, something I was thinking of right just now when I was making my last statement was that if let's say in 1978, if somebody, if a stealth fighter crashed, mm-hmm. and somebody happened upon it, and they were just big pieces, they wouldn't know what the hell it was.
Yeah.
They wouldn't think it was an airplane. They might guess that it's an airplane, but it's all flat, it's black, and it's got this kind of weird, if it's broken, I guess, I think they've got kind of a honeycombed carbon fiber kind of surface. I don't know. I'm not privy to these things. But, you know, there's the possibility that people would have not known what they were looking at that point, and the military, of course, did, and they tell people to shut up about it. I mean, that's just a possibility there. Maybe there were aliens. Maybe it was some secret test thing. I do not know. Of course, there's Nick's book that combines elements of all those things that made a lot of people very angry and I'm glad it did, because it starts controversy and gets people talking.
But do you think that ufology's like over-reliance on Roswell maybe finally kind of coming to a close? It'll still obviously be held up on a pedestal as like the Keystone UFO case, but at the same time, maybe people are kind of starting to move on a little bit from it, I hope. Do you think
I'm glad they're moving on from it, because other things like, you know, people's reactions and how does the phenomenon interact with people on a personal and psychological level and things like that nobody really looks at. All they look at is ground traces and what was flying and what angle was it at and how big was it and how long was it here. That's been done to death, and we've got so much of that data that we don't know what to do with it, which is why I said maybe the government disclosure stuff will help a little bit. But there's so many other aspects to the phenomenon that nobody's really concentrated on.
And what do you – like, talk a little bit more about that then. What do you think – obviously you kind of touched on them, but talk more about that. What elements should they be looking at?
Well, like I said, I wrote a column about this. What about subjective – reactions to UFO encounters? How did it make the person feel? What did they think was happening? Were there any lasting effects? Do they have nightmares about it later? Do they have dreams about it? Did it happen again? Does the person see things later? You know, the phenomenon relates to people on different levels than just seeing things.
Yeah.
And I don't think that a lot of UFO investigators ask those questions about people. They just ask them about physical aspects of it, not mental aspects, not, dare I say it, spiritual aspects of the phenomenon. Because I've talked to people where they said, you know, their value system got changed, their religious views got changed. Is that because it's coming from the outside of them? Are they being affected by the phenomenon, or is there something inherent in the, you know, in the human psyche that is affected by experience with a UFO or something anomalous like that? There's a real dearth of information and study on that kind of those kind of effects, and I think they're just as important, and in some cases they might even be more important than just like, you know, getting the straight physical facts.
Yeah,
that might be a huge part of the puzzle that we haven't been looking at, because that kind of stuff is not valued very highly in science and our society is subjective emotional reactions to things.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think that you think that's probably just like part and parcel with sort of the UFO researchers who want to, you know, the nuts and bolts aspect of it, and they don't want to get into the spiritual side of it and that whole, you know, internal debate within the UFO scene about nuts and bolts versus the spiritual aspect type of thing, and they want the hard evidence, if you will, stuff that they can show to real scientists' attitude.
Yeah, well, of course they can show that to real scientists, but the real scientists, for the most part, aren't going to care because all they have is a bunch of data about something that can't be put in a lab, can't be repeated, can't be called up on demand, etc. That's what science deals with, and I think science is as it's configured right now, at least the physical sciences, have dealt as much as they can, and probably gone almost as far as they can in analyzing UFO reports, as opposed to UFO encounters.
Yeah. So we need to take more of a look at the encounter, like you said, than just the sighting.
Right, exactly. I found on somebody's website, and I think it's in one of my books, there's sort of a chart that Jacques Vallée drew up in the 1960s.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of an array of different effects that were felt or seen, et cetera, during a UFO sighting. And one of them, wait, let me see if I can find it. It's vastly interesting to me. But what it does is include physical effects, lasting effects, psychological and physical, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Things that you don't often see in a UFO report.
Do you think that ufology will turn towards that, or is it going to just take like a whole new generation of researchers to sort of do that? Because it seems like it, what are we going to call Peter Davenport and have him start asking like additional questions or something like that? It's hard to sort of turn that corner, if you will, on changing the way the researchers do the research. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I think it's going to take new people coming in and concentrating on this for a long period of time before
yeah.
we see any effect of it. Because people that are doing it now, I think they're kind of locked, you know, nothing against them, but they're locked in their ways about how they want to look at the UFO subject and how they think the problem or whatever the mystery is going to be solved. And, you know, for hundreds and hundreds of years, mysteries have been solved by science.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now science runs up against something that it can't solve with the tools that it has at the moment. So I'm not saying anything against science. I'm saying that maybe, you know, other sciences and other aspects of the human experience must be put into the equation. Here it is. Level 1, sighting. Level 2, physical effects. Level 3, living entities. Level 4, and this is interesting, reality transformation. How did the person feel at the time of the sighting? Did they feel like, you know, everything was as it was during the sighting, after the sighting, weeks, months, years after the sighting? Lasting injury, that's another one. I think it's important, you know, and that's just the beginning there. That Vallée came up with in the 60s, I believe.
Yeah.
That's just the beginning of other aspects of encounters that people that do research in this should be looking at. I've never been a ufologist. I haven't gone out and done field research and questioned witnesses and been there right after the sighting or whatever. Although it's funny, I've had people call me and tell me a friend of mine called me about a month ago and said, I'm watching a UFO right now.
Oh, wow. What?
Really? He goes, yeah, it's out over the ocean, and he described it to me.
That's cool.
But the thing was that, you know, it didn't, he said it looked like the moon in the sky, and then he realized he saw the moon right next to it, so it wasn't the moon. And then somebody pointed out to me later, which was good, I love this, to have this at my fingertips with the net and blogging and all that. And he goes, you know, there was no moon out that night. the moon didn't appear that night. And so then I'm left wondering, was this guy screwing around with me, or is there something extremely weird going on there?
That's just strange. That's a weird one.
He swears to me that that's what happened, and he saw these two shapes, and one was the moon and one wasn't. And the one that wasn't the moon just looked like this round orb, and he said it looked like these tentacles or something were closing around it as a shadow. Then it got small, and these lights around it were blinking, and then it flew off over the ocean.
Oh, weird. Why can't I see anything like that?
I don't know. That's the same thing I'm asking. It's funny. I did reports gathered off the Internet of these California sightings all within about 2 weeks of each other, like four of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And two of them were within, like, a couple of miles of where I was, but not at the time I was there.
Oh, man.
And one was, you know, at 4 in the morning in Burbank, which is over the hill from me here, over the Hollywood Hills. And one was near San Diego at the Marine base at Camp Pendleton, which I had driven by, like, 2 days before. And one was out in the out near Victorville, where I was out at the dry lake flying. I was out there flying a paraglider. And I left it at about 3 o'clock, and at about 5 o'clock the sighting started, and it went on for about 2 hours.
Oh, man. They're looking for you, dude.
they like to be there after I'm gone.
I guess so, yeah.
Gone? Okay, let's go.
You have a stalker, an intergalactic stalker. And actually, there's a kind of good segue here, because you were talking about the good aspects of you know, the online world of ufology, and this year we did see kind of one of the bad aspects in a way, and that's the sort of viral rage that was the drone photos that sort of lit a little fire in ufology during the summer. I kind of like to think of them as 2007's version of Serpo, because they became wildly popular on the internet, but I don't really know. I didn't really dig too much into it. I kind of poo-pooed them. I like to give these kind of stories the time to percolate, and usually if they're any good, they'll last. And I don't know too much more about the drone stories, but I'm sure you saw at least the emergence of the drone story in 2007. The drone photo story. What did you think of that whole thing?
You know what's funny is I thought it was more of the, you said it was like Serpo. I thought it was brought to you by the same people or some of the same people that were involved with Serpo.
Really?
I had that feeling just because of what it was and the way it was presented. You see, when Serpo happened, there was, the internet was not, what am I saying? Serpo happened, I think, when people that were perpetrating it were aware of how they could use the internet.
Yeah.
Because before that, they had to find people and kind of, you know, maybe like Victor Martinez, and shoot information out through those people. And then somebody realized, I don't know why it took them so long, why don't we just do our own thing on the internet and do it that way? What I'm talking about is people in intelligence and counterintelligence doing things to mess with people for a different purpose, for which I do not know what that purpose is. But I'm pretty sure that it was a government concocted hoax.
Drone photos, you mean?
Drone photos. I'm not as sure, but I've got a sneaking hunch.
Really, but. Yeah, it's weird to wonder why they would do something like that in the first place, unless it's like a psychological experiment to see how stories spread or something like that in a small community type of thing.
Well, I think it's something to do with passing messages like right out in the open.
What do you mean?
Let's say I wanted to pass a message to somebody.
Yeah.
And then somebody announces that there's going to be this brand new giant pretty statue in the middle of the park. And there's going to be inscription on the bottom of it. Everybody goes and looks at the inscription, and everybody says, oh, that's very nice. And two or three people who know what they're looking for go and look at part of the inscription and get the piece of information that they need to off of that inscription.
Weird. And you think that's what, there was like a message in the drone photo for certain people, but you and I aren't privy to what the message was?
I think that's what Serpo was, and the drone thing, since it had so many elements to it, that... I think there might have been a message in there somewhere.
That's bizarre.
Maybe in the writing, maybe in the timing of the pictures, maybe what the picture showed. I don't know. I mean, I may be totally out on a limb and a complete idiot here, but it to me it had the same earmarks of kind of the Serpo thing, because it was totally weird, completely insane, completely unsupported. There's no way to check up on it, really, and everybody that it was involved with, it was anonymous.
Yeah.
And, in fact, the person that came out with it said that, you know, was first called, no, he was called Chad, that's right.
And it took off kind of like wildfire in on the online world.
Yeah, and it took off like wildfire for a while. Now, if some private person was doing it, you know, cheers to them, good job.
Yeah.
I don't think it had anything to do with, somebody said it was a viral marketing campaign for Halo or whatever the name of that. What's that? What's the video game?
Yeah. I think that was the guy who writes for my website. That was his theory on the whole thing.
Yeah, and you know what? I actually played that video game with somebody. I don't play video games because I think they're a waste of time to me. But I started playing it with this guy, this friend of mine who was six. I was just hanging out with him playing the video game, and I was looking around for all that alien writing. I didn't see any of it.
I don't know. I don't play video games either, so I'll have to ask him.
I didn't play the whole game. I don't know, but if some of that stuff was supposed to be featured prominently in that game, I didn't see it. And I played it for like 2 hours with this guy.
Yeah, he posted a little follow-up to it, actually. I haven't posted it on the website, but it'll be up there today. He does mention that, and I think he provides a link to something with the alien aspects to Halo. So I don't know. I'll forward you the URL for that.
There was a guy in England that produced that really cool little music video, and he took all of the graphics and the pictures and all that, and made kind of a like this fake little short film about it, which was great. It was fun. I can't remember the name of the guy. Wait. And the funny thing was, after I posted about it, the guy, the person that actually did it, came on the list and said, thanks for giving me the kudos for it, and it was fun to make it.
Well, that's cool. Just to sort of like jump back to the message theory, who would you think the messages will be between? The government and people in ufology, or completely outside people outside of ufology?
Outside of people ufology, but it picks up people in ufology and people that are, you know, if it got to the point where I'm thinking of it or I have the suspicion, obviously people that outside of this country or terrorists or whatever, different governments, are going to have that suspicion too, so they're going to start hanging around. You know what? I may have this tunnel vision because of the Benowitz thing and that disinformation campaign. But the purpose of that, of a lot of this disinformation is, at least in this case with SERPA, and the other thing is one, to, you know, present some information that's being passed between people, and two, which is a classic disinformation thing, is to pull people out of their holes who might be hiding there, like putting out a sugar and see which flies come to it, or turning on a light and see which moths come to it, or whatever.
Yeah.
So if that's not there, those people are going to stay in the woodwork. And with the internet, you can track who's interested in things. You know, what people were using, what search parameters, especially early on, because after a few days, it just went, you know, it's a huge mess.
Yeah. So, like, maybe as an example, would be like, you know, if the terrorists are trying to figure out how to, you know, combat the drones or something that the U.S. government flies over the Middle East, you know, if they were interested in the drone story, the drone UFO story, all of a sudden, then the government can kind of track those people down and get on them, type of thing. Is that kind of the right idea?
It used to be who was coming out to Area 51 to take pictures, or, you know, who was going over by the military base to ask people questions about UFO sightings that didn't happen to be anybody anyone knew about.
Yeah. Now it's like, who's trying to find out more about the drone planes?
Yeah. Like I said, I could be completely way out of line, totally off in left field here.
Well,
but that you know, I these little scenarios I run through my head, I play with them, and I sit on them for a while, look at information, talk to people, and see if they bear any fruit. I don't know if it will. I you know, there's people who have gone a lot further with the SERPO thing than I ever wanted to, because as soon as I got into it, I realized there's a lot of emotion and territorialism and things like that associated with, and strongly held opinions associated with looking at this stuff. And I just didn't want to get into it because I got some wicked nasty emails from people just because of talking about SERPO. And I put up a little picture right after I did one of my SERPO things, and I had a picture of the Brer Fox and the Tar Baby. As soon as I stuck my hand in it, it stuck on me and it wouldn't let go, and it was very unpleasant. So I just don't want to. I'd rather sit in the background and watch and talk to people quietly rather than make pronouncements.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I said, I could be totally wrong. I don't think I am. I think part of what I'm thinking and what I've heard from different people is right and makes sense. And, you know, just what I told you about passing messages and that's like kind of the scratching the bare surface of it. But, you know, publicly I don't want to get into a lot of the stuff that I talk about on that angle with certain people, because it's too charged politically, you know, for people politically, not like global politics or anything. And there's a lot of emotion and strongly held beliefs around it, and it's just too much noise for me to deal with. And so I think a lot of work is done by people who kind of quietly sit in the background, and then at some point when everything makes sense and everything falls into place and you have a good argument and people that are willing to talk, then you say something about it. I think that's what disinformation people count on too, is for people, as soon as they get information, to spit it straight out into the public.
Yeah. And if you get mixed up in the whole debate and everything, that's kind of, you're just going along with kind of what they want anyway. So it's better to sort of let it play out in the first place.
Yeah, and it's just, I get the feeling. I used to get a lot of this information from different people, like, you know, people that said they were privy to certain information, and I don't anymore. And I think it's because, one, I probably said a couple of things I shouldn't have, which is part of the reason of shutting up. And the other reason is I don't I'm really careful about what I try to be really careful about what I say publicly. When I'm not, it's made very clear to me very quickly from a lot of different quarters that I shouldn't have said what I said. And it's happened a couple of times in my life, and it's been kind of upsetting.
Oh, boy.
One was way back when I was doing Excluded Middle magazine. I published something, and the person that gave it to me said that his unit or people or whoever said that I didn't present it the way they wanted to, and they didn't want to tell me anything anymore.
Oh, man, that sucks.
Yeah, but the thing was, about 3 or 4 months later, they were doing the same thing again. But after that, I didn't release anything that they told me anymore, and they lost interest.
Weird. So it's like a weird dance.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like.
Strange.
And they're leading. If you try to lead, they drop you. Hey, you're stepping on my feet. Get away from me.
Yeah. Weird.
I'm just not really involved in that anymore. It's just basically, you know, friends and people I've known for a long time, and occasionally somebody will get in touch with me and, you know, say, oh, I read so-and-so. And then somebody will come on the blog sometime and start saying things I know he's not supposed to know, or he or she or whoever it is.
Yeah.
And they'll kind of put out feelers and talk to me a little bit, and then they'll drop it, and then I never hear from them again.
That's strange.
Happened a couple of times, and one of the guys' names on UFO Mystic, which I thought was a great name for somebody who might be doing this, was Whisper Stream. That's a screen name.
Now, what would you say the attitude was of the people in ufology? Obviously, there was a huge debate over Serpo. Did the drone photo... I noticed that it got a lot of play in the UFO scene, and I'm sure there was a lot of debate about it, but what would you say a lot of the big names and normal people sort of try to just keep it at arm's length, if you will, while it settled down, or what was the attitude in the UFO field about the drones photos?
I think most people that believed themselves to be serious about it almost completely ignored it. Because it was so outrageous and it was completely, there was no way to prove it.
Yeah.
You know, and it, you know, it's fun. It's like a fun carnival ride, but it doesn't get any work done.
Exactly. Yeah.
Need fun carnival rides, which is why I talked about it on the site, because it's fun and it's an aspect of the UFO experience and how we react to it, even if it was based on completely nothing, as I think it was. Although, you know, what's very funny is somebody made a comment on one of the posts, I think. He said, now that Whitley Strieber has come out and kind of supported this drone thing and saying he saw one, he said, just wait, people are going to start seeing them in other different places now.
Yeah.
And it might take on a life of its own just because that meme has been injected into the culture, into the conversation, into our ideas of what we should be seeing in the sky, no matter how insane it is. I thought that was a great idea, and I wonder if that's going to happen.
When did Whitley Strieber say that, like recently?
Yeah, I read something on his site. He said December 7th, actually, Pearl Harbor Day, he said he woke up in the middle of the night and he saw one of the drone things hanging out right outside his window in Santa Monica over the ocean.
Yikes.
And being Whitley Strieber, I believe him, but I also believe that he's gotten to the point where whatever the phenomenon is or whatever it's doing to him is almost indistinguishable from, you know, something that everybody else would call a dream or something like that. Not to say that it's not real. There is something real going on with Strieber, and there has been for a long time, something coming from outside his consciousness. But he's such a high-profile character, and he's such a creative person, and, you know, it may sound like I'm trying to say he's delusional, he doesn't know what he's talking about, and we shouldn't believe him. That's not what I'm saying at all, given what I said about subjective reactions and emotional reactions and all that to UFO sighting. I think that, for better or worse, he's kind of like the bellwether of what might be coming you know, occasionally in our interaction with whatever it is that's out there. It's funny, some people think that I don't believe in any UFOs, and I think it's ridiculous, and I'm a big skeptic. It's like, you know, that couldn't be further from the truth. I think that there's something that's extra human, not us, that affects us every once in a while, and we can't get a handle on it. And things like SERPO and like the drone thing, the carrot phenomenon, as it's called, whatever you want to call it, that comes in out of left field, probably made up, but then shapes our collective idea about what UFOs should be, at least in one aspect. Does that make any sense?
I think so, yeah. I think so. Now, based on what we see now with SERPO and the drone thing, should we expect more of these types of wildfire stories, you know, in the years to come? I presume so.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, I can't wait to see what's come up with next.
Yeah.
I'd like to see a drone hovering over the, you know, over O'Hare Airport. That would be hilarious.
Could you even venture to guess what we'll see next? I mean, nobody really could have predicted the SERPO and then the drone thing, so it's probably hard to even imagine. But, I mean, can you even venture a guess what might be the next big thing?
You know what? When, as soon as you say that, the first thing that comes to mind is the first scene in one of Strieber's books where everybody in that one town heard the 9 knocks on the side of their houses at like 2 or 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
Just some like massive but totally contained thing that hits the news, because I hadn't heard of it till I read about it in Strieber's book, but there were news reports about it.
Weird. So that's what you think might be, just off the top of your head. Interesting. Like a psychic premonition almost.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I flashed on as soon as you asked that.
All right.
If there's something else trying to communicate with us, I was having this argument with somebody at work. He goes, well, until they land on the White House lawn. And I said, I don't think it happened that way. I think it's going to be from the bottom up instead of the top down.
Yeah, like just a mass UFO type sighting where they'll appear over like all the cities or something crazy like that?
No. Something ridiculously subtle, like, you know, seeding a few different few hundred or thousand people here and there with strange ideas that kind of bubble up from the subconscious and people are not quite totally aware of, but they know that there's something there. You know what I mean?
Vaguely, what would it, like, turn into like a phenomenon, a national type phenomenon, or just I don't know, I'm a little confused by what you're saying.
Well, I'm confused about what I'm saying too. Because if I was coming from another planet or dimension or somebody that wasn't human, or this planet, whatever, I got to the point where I had to admit I was here because there was no way around it. Because if you had a, you know, if whatever it is had a choice, then, you know, it's either going to say yes, let's deal with these people, or no, forget it. Obviously, it's yes, let's deal with these people.
Yeah.
Because it keeps showing up. You know, but the time schedule for this consciousness and us and our way of looking at things and doing things there's such a wide gulf between it. You know, how do we go about doing that? You know, just saying, oh, we're here, you know, that's going to make everybody go, whoa. It's not going to be good for either side.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's another way to do this? And this is, you know, I think I'm getting this directly from Strieber, is go to a few hundred people or a few thousand people or a couple million people and start nudging them in a way that they have to admit that there's something else there. There's something coming from outside the human experience that has to be noticed and has to be dealt with. That's, you know, kind of like an animal kind of, you know, checking you out and maybe coming up and taking something out of your hand and then backing off a little bit and, you know, doing it in a very careful and subtle way. But, you know, doing it like an animal, but in an infinitely more intelligent way and subtle way and subconscious way even.
Yeah.
I know I sound very vague, but it's one of those things where I can't presume to describe how something that isn't human thinks. So, you know, I got to use our metaphors and our words and our language to try and describe that.
Exactly, yeah. But when they interact with these people, then it would sort of like start something in them where they would, you know, reach like some kind of critical mass, if you will. Is that kind of what you're saying? Like it would start with a few people and then they would sort of, it would just become, it would help to grease the wheels of acceptance?
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. To the point where, you know, plant that seed until we're at the point where, and maybe push us along a little bit, till we're at the point where we can see reality in a different way.
Yeah.
And I hate using the word reality, and every time I use it, I put it in quotes practically.
Yeah, but it's got to be like a slow evolution and not just a them land on the White House lawn, because they probably know as well as we do that that would be a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, do you think there's something else besides humans here that are affecting us?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. We're talking on the same page here.
Yeah.
I'm not willing to say there's people coming from other planets and people being abducted and taken away for genetic experiments and all that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I doubt it. I don't know if I believe it.
Yeah.
What I'm pretty certain of is there's something that's not human that's been affecting us for thousands and thousands of years.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I don't try to get married to one theory or anything like that, because as soon as you get into one thing, you find some other news that you have to try and fit into your
right, exactly.
thing, and you know it becomes a nightmare. And it's better just to sit back, look at all the stuff, and try and figure out exactly what's going on, you know, but realize that at the base of it, you're not going to figure it out because you're like the millionth person to look at it.
Yeah, exactly. It's just it's there for everybody to interpret in the way that they want to, and I think that if there is, you know, if there is something else trying to communicate with us, that's what they're dealing with.
Yeah.
I don't know if it has any connection to, you know, seeing flying saucers in the sky. Probably it does. That may just be a little signpost in the overall campaign. And, you know, like I said, the time frame for them might be completely different for us. We think it, you know, we got to get something done in, you know, this amount of time, in 2 weeks or 5 years or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But to them, it's like, well, whenever.
Yeah.
You know, we got time. We don't care. We're going to do it the way we want. If there is even a, you know, a collective, you know, understanding about what's going on, they may be all completely, totally independent agents. I don't know.
Yeah. It's hard to wrap your mind around it. To try and pin down some kind of, like, rationale or motivation behind what is going on is probably not going to work, because there's many different motivations probably behind all the different stuff that seems to be happening.
Yeah, and there's many different theories about that. I keep saying, you know, there's this other thing, you know. Maybe it's part of our subconscious. Maybe we think it's part of our subconscious, and just by the nature of what we think is reality, it's not that. It's, you know, our subconscious is everything, or whatever we connect to down there. I don't know. Maybe it's aliens coming from other planets. I, you know, could be.
Yeah,
but you know, my nature by my nature is if an entire crowd is looking at something and saying this is what it is, I immediately run off in the other direction because I want to see what everybody else is missing, whether it has validity or not.
Yeah,
because sometimes it does, and even if it doesn't, it's often interesting and fun.
Pardon the interruption, but I'm Mike Wilbon. Tony, more than 30 people in Stephenville, Texas, say they saw a UFO. You believe him?
Tony Kornheiser, believe him. Who do you think was up there getting probed?
I'm going to presume.
Do you know how many times I've gone through alien probes in my life?
Well, how'd you get back here so quickly?
Teleportation.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
This is why we play the game.